Well, I'm going to talk with you today about concurrent sexual partnering in a very vulnerable population, that is homeless men. And let me also disclose that our authors, including myself, have no conflicts of interest. I need to mention that. So why did we focus on concurrent sexual partnering? Well, this is a particular kind of risk behavior for HIV that hasn't received as much attention as unprotected sexual intercourse among men and women, or among men, hasn't received as much attention as sex trade. But it's very important. And one of the key things to remember about concurrent sexual partnering is that unlike sequential monogamous relationships, even if those relationships are multiple, there is no time gap between potential transmission events from partner to partner. And that's what distinguishes concurrent sexual partnering. So there's much more opportunity for HIV to be transmitted. And one of the reasons that we decided to focus on, actually, this is not in the right order. That's interesting. Let me just tell you about Skid Row, downtown Los Angeles. And this is a 50 square block area in LA where the largest concentration of homeless people in that city reside. And it's very difficult for someone in this particular situation, a homeless man, to think about self-care or to think about care of his or her partners. And one of the reasons that we decided to focus on behavioral health and social normative influences to try to understand those influences on sexual concurrency among homeless men is that we know that sexual concurrency is related to alcohol and drug use among other populations. We know less about depression and PTSD as they're associated with concurrency, but we know that mental health is associated with other kinds of risk behaviors. Concurrency hasn't been investigated at all among homeless men, so that makes this very unique. One thing I want to point out about PTSD symptoms is that it has been found to be associated with other kinds of sexual risk behaviors among veterans of Afghanistan and Iraq, the Iraq wars. And it may be the case regarding PTSD that those feelings of detachment and that perception of a foreshortened future that's so characteristic of PTSD may make individuals not very concerned about, again, their self-care or protecting other individuals. There's more interest in an immediate reward and trying to escape those very disturbing symptoms. We don't know very much about the relationship between PTSD and sexual risk behavior, though. And we were interested in social normative influences or the potential influence of social networks on risk behavior because it's very reasonable to expect that our perceptions of other individuals' behaviors may affect our own. And this has been demonstrated repeatedly in other populations. It's been specifically demonstrated that risky behaviors in one's social networks are associated with risk behaviors in populations of homeless women and homeless youth. But this particular issue hasn't been investigated yet among homeless men. So our goal in this study was simply to try to address the gaps in our understanding of a particular sexual risk behavior, concurrency, among homeless men. And we thought that poor behavioral health, in other words, substance use disorder, use of substances, and poor mental health, that is symptoms of depression and PTSD, would be associated with a higher rate of concurrency. So we focused on that particular area that I showed you the picture of, the Los Angeles downtown Central City East, because that is a locus of concern, not only because of its concentration of homelessness, but also because of the higher rates of HIV prevalence in the downtown area compared to a number of other areas in Los Angeles and Los Angeles County. And we wanted to achieve a representative sample of homeless men to generalize to a larger population of the thousands of homeless men who are in Skid Row. So we used probability sampling techniques, and we focused on sampling from all of the meal programs in the Skid Row area because the meal programs serve those men who use shelters as well as men who don't want to use services or who otherwise are not affiliated with the shelter system. So it allows us to capture a large cross-section of the homeless population. And these are two of the organizations among a number of them that we worked with in this study and have worked with in prior studies. And this is the Midnight Mission and Union Rescue Mission downtown, and you can see people starting to line up in the Midnight Mission for a meal. So we had some eligibility criteria for our sample. Those men must have been at least age 18. They must have had at least one experience of literal homelessness in the past 12 months, and they must have been heterosexually active. They must have had vaginal or anal sex with a woman in the past 6 months. They could have been having sex with men as well, but our focus was on heterosexual transmission. Heterosexual transmission, because heterosexual transmission is the primary means through which women contract HIV. And in 2009, I believe that 31% of all new HIV cases were attributable to heterosexual intercourse. So that's key. And we achieved a sample size of 305 homeless men. And we used structured interviews in the field, and we used computer-assisted personal interviews. And these interviews were completely programmed with the EgoWeb software, which is available through this website. We made a number of modifications to make it work well for us, but it's available for everyone. And let me first focus on our social network measures and analyses. We used an egocentric or personal network approach. There are basically two types of social network analysis. One is sociocentric, one is egocentric. And in the case of egocentric networks, the individual, we focus on the ties that surround a focal individual. And those ties, those individuals in the social network, are not limited to a certain geographic space or social space. They can be anyone that the individual nominates. So we used an approach that we've used in previous studies of homeless women and homeless youth in Los Angeles. And we used a name generator. We asked the respondents to provide the names of 20 people that they know or who know them, that they've had some kind of contact with over the past year. And then we asked a number of questions about each of those network members, or alters in the lingo of formal network language. We wanted to know the types of people. Who were those people? Who are those 20 individuals? Are they sex partners, relatives, family members, service providers, etc.? And what are the kinds of behaviors that those individuals engage in? We were very interested in whether they drink heavily, whether they use drugs, engage in risky sex. And we were also interested in the structure of networks. I'm not going to focus much on that today, but things like density. And let me also mention that for those of you who want more detail, I've uploaded a copy of this presentation to the APA website, and this study is now, just now in press at AIDS and Behavior, if you want more information. So our measure of concurrency resembled that of other studies that have looked, those few studies that have looked at this issue, and it was determined through our elicitation of the sex partners in the social network section. And we asked for the four most recent partners around the time that you last had sex with an individual, were you also having sex with other people? Our behavioral health measures included diagnostic screeners of depression, PTSD. We assessed binge drinking, 5 or more drinks within 2 hours in the past 6 months. We looked at hard drug use, or that is use of crack, cocaine, methamphetamine, or heroin. We also looked at injection drug use over the lifetime. Let me share with you a few of the background characteristics. Let me focus on a few, and that is that the large majority of this population was African American. And if we think and understand, if we understand and accept that poverty is the primary driver of homelessness, then we understand why the majority this population is African American, because people of color are disproportionately affected by poverty in the United States because of our legacy of racism and discrimination. Let me also look at the bottom of this slide. We assessed HIV serostatus by self-report. I know that's a limitation, but over 7% of men were either told by a health professional as a result of an HIV test that they were HIV positive, or had some strong reason to believe themselves that they were HIV positive. And that's striking when we consider that the rate of HIV in the United States is 0.5% to 1%. The rate of concurrency was 39% in this population. It's not as high as some other populations. It's not as high as a population in Washington, D.C., a similar population in Washington, D.C., but it's strikingly high, certainly compared to the general population. Just a few points about their behavioral health. notable rates of PTSD and depression based on our screening diagnoses, but not as high as what we found for homeless women. About half of them have been using hard drugs in the past 6 months. And let's look at a couple of the network measures. 68% had network members who had been engaging in risky sex by the homeless men's perception. I mean, they can't directly observe that their network members are engaging in risky sex, but it's the perceptions that can be very influential. What our social network members are doing can influence our own behaviors. So ultimately, we use multivariate binomial logistic regression to understand the predictors, if you will, in this cross-sectional study, the correlates of concurrency. And here's the behavioral health correlates and the network correlates, and these were significant. We controlled for background characteristics in these analyses, and we do see that the odds that someone with PTSD engaged in concurrency are 2.3 times greater than the odds that someone without PTSD engaged in sexual partnering, concurrent partnering. Hard drug use was also a significant predictor. And if the men perceived that they had members of their networks who engaged in risky sex, well, their odds of concurrent sexual partnering were 3.7 times greater than for men who did not have such members of their networks. So that's quite striking as well. So in summary, PTSD is associated with concurrency. This is the first study, to my knowledge, that's reported this association between PTSD and concurrency, whether among homeless people or other individuals in our population. Hard drug use is associated with concurrency, as we would expect. This is a well-demonstrated finding. And consistent with social norms theory, the men's perceptions that they had network members who were engaging in risky sex was associated with their concurrent sexual partnering. So what are some conclusions that we can draw? Well, it's quite clear that for the men's well-being, as well as concern for their morbidity and mortality, that it's important to address their behavioral health issues, their mental health problems, and their substance use disorders. One of the challenges that we continue to face in the homeless population is that they have poor access to services, relatively speaking. And that may be for a number of reasons. They may be prioritizing other needs. Their need to meet subsistence living on a day-to-day basis. They may prioritize the first-order need of housing, or a safe place to live, rather than services immediately. We do need to employ evidence-based practices to reduce sexual risk behaviors. And many substance abuse treatment programs provide some kind of HIV prevention programming, but the challenge, again, is that these men may not access those services readily. So one thing we might consider, and in fact we are considering, is providing these kinds of services in low-barrier settings, the places where men are right now. We want them to be housed, but we need to help them in some way immediately. And so there are brief HIV interventions that could be adapted to serve this population in transitional housing or shelters, maybe even on the street. And we cannot forget that there's a larger ecological context that we need to attend to. I'm in a school of social work, and so that's a driving force. And it is the social environment. It's the environment that affects us as well. And in this case, it's the social context. But the social context is not the only surroundings that we need to think about. It's also the physical environment, the picture of the men in the tents on Skid Row. Again, that's not an environment that's conducive to healthy behavior. And people who are poor have limited opportunity sometimes to change their social environment, and certainly have very limited opportunities to change their physical environments. And this is something we need to work on, both the characteristics of the individual, remedying individual problems, as well as remedying the overall environments for people who are entrenched in poverty or who are living in a place like Skid Row. And we know from our qualitative research, also recently published in AIDS and Behavior, that we know how and in what manner men have challenges trying to form relationships or sustain a normal relationship in a setting where there is no opportunity for intimacy except in a porta potty or in a motel room they might happen to rent. And very few of the transitional housing settings or permanent housing settings currently have accommodations for partners. So that's something we must think about. Now, I also want to point out the other research that's shown how important housing can be to promoting positive health behaviors. We know that among HIV-positive individuals, HIV risk behaviors are reduced when housing status improves. So this is a signal to us that permanent supportive housing really is a key to serving homeless men who are engaging in behaviors like sexual concurrency, and that once they are stabilized in housing, that's the opportunity to provide the wraparound services, the behavioral health care, and also the HIV prevention program that might fully remediate the threats to their health. So that's all I have, and I thank you very much. I'll turn it over to Dr. Rice.